Morning Glory, Dean Grace, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Special edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show, talking with Vince Flynn, America's best-selling author of books about the war. They're novels, but they are really about the war, the long war, the war that we are in. And this hour, we're going to focus in on that. Vince Flynn, I think of these, the one that got to me the most is Memorial Day, because it's about the city which I love and the city in which I have lived and may live again, Washington, D.C., coming under nuclear threat. And it reminds me of Bill Keller's story when he wasn't the editor of the New York Times about, you know, can they get a device here? And this is what happens when a device is coming. And it's the classic question of what do you do when it comes time to interrogate or even use extreme measures against terrorists who know about a massive impending attack, and you don't let people off the hook. You put it right there. Yep. You force that hypothetical. I don't think the left loves to talk, will even ever confront this hypothetical. What's your thought about the Memorial Day and the reactions to it?
Well, you know, you get these people like Matt Damon, for instance, who goes on national television and is not challenged the way you get challenged. You go on these shows and you say something that's, you know, somewhat, or anything you say is going to get challenged by, you know, Chris Matthews or whoever. Matt Damon goes on the Today Show and he says these crazy things like, oh, you know, torture never ever works. You know, I could, you know, get somebody to say anything and anything that I want them to say by torturing them. Well, he starts off with a faulty premise, which is that the men, and I have to be very careful when I discuss this because I'm always afraid that one of these days the Justice Department is going to knock on my door and subpoena me and ask me, who do you talk to and what do you know, at which point I'm going to end up in jail. Not
call me. I'll represent you. I'll call you.
But let me say to you, you know, wink, nudge, fictitiously how this stuff goes down. You catch somebody like Sheikh Mohammed on the battlefield, and you bring them into a very dark place, and you disorient them over a 3 to 4 day period. You don't let them sleep. You play Barney, blaring "I love you, you love me." You do all kinds of crazy stuff like that, and you may actually slap them around a little bit. You get them so disoriented that they don't know if they're coming or going, and if they won't begin to talk at that point, you may waterboard them. Which I always say is nothing that we should be proud of as a country, but there are many things that this country has done that, you know, I wouldn't be proud of. President Lincoln and President Roosevelt are often, FDR that is, are often cited as two of our greatest presidents. Nobody disagrees with that. But the left conveniently leaves out the fact that both of them, at a time of war, basically threw out habeas corpus and just absolutely tossed people in jail. Opened up every letter of FDR opened more mail than any president
right.
has ever done. Anything that came over from Europe, they just opened it. They didn't care.
Yep.
And so we are going to have to make some, you know, some arrangements here. Now, when they get these terrorists to start talking, what they do is you waterboard them. All right. They pop up. You ask them the question again. They never start out you asking a question that they don't already know the answer to. It's just like an attorney in a court of law. And once they get them going down that track, and by the way, they're hooked up to, you know, biosensors, just, you know, to measure everything to know if they're lying to them or not. They've got people sitting in another room that are connected to databases all over the world, and they're checking everything these guys are saying. And at any point, they can say, oh, we'll take a 15-minute break, go out in the other room. They find out what's he lying, what's he telling the truth about. They go back in and they say, listen, you just lied to us about this. Do you want to go back on the board?
Well, that's the brilliance of extreme measures. I mean, you really communicate in that, and in lesser so in Memorial Day, but extreme measures, how this actually works.
And you know what? It's unfortunate that we even have to talk about it, because the truth is, and in my opinion, this is why we have elected representatives. These 15 people that sit on the Senate Select Intelligence Committee are supposed to do this for us. They're supposed to make these tough decisions and keep their mouth shut and say, you know what, these guys never signed the Geneva Convention. They intentionally attack civilians. You know what, so be it. Let the CIA go take them to some, you know, I'm sorry to say it, some hellhole of a prison in the middle of nowhere and make their life uncomfortable. As I once said to President Bush, and I actually got him to snicker about it, I said, Mr. President, the next time somebody starts complaining to you about the treatment of this, just stop and say, are you kidding me? You want me to lose a wink of sleep over the fact that we waterboarded the guy who came up with the idea to take these civilian airliners, slit the throats of these flight attendants, slit the throats of the pilots, turn them around and fly them into the World Trade Center? And you want me to Well, you want some compassion from me? What do you want from me? Yeah. Boo-hoo.
I just got a note from Frank Dowse. He runs the Agamas Group in San Diego, 20 years in the Marine Corps, aviator guy. You might even known him or come across him. He taught the survival and evasion course for a number of years, in which some of the candidates are waterboarded. And he cannot believe we are abandoning this technique for circumstances such as those you describe in Memorial Day. Do you think we've hurt our national security, Vince Flynn, by doing so?
I do. And I'll tell you, did you remember, I know you watched the inaugural.
Yep.
Remember the moment where President Obama said, you know, we will not, you know, give up our ideals, you know, for security. And they flashed to President Bush, and he kind of gave it that little Texas, you know, smirk and nodded. And you know the man, and I know the man, and I know exactly what was going through his head, which was, we'll see.
Well, you know, he's also I'm sure he's told you this. I'm not sure, but my guess, he said to you that the briefings change the candidate.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm hoping that is the case, that you find out how many people want to kill us.
Yep.
And how they want to kill us, and you've got to take this differently. There's a speech in Memorial Day on page 365. Mitch Rapp is talking to the president. Mr. President, there are a lot of things that I don't tell you about, stuff you're better off knowing, but maybe now's a good time to give you a glimpse into what it takes to win this war. Do you have any idea how we found out the nuke material was on that ship headed for Charleston? Obviously, I don't know if those conversations have happened in the Oval Office. I'm not sure I want them to happen. That's what deniability has always been about. But again, the rule of law matters. Do you think we have hit the right balance over the last 7 years, Vince Flynn?
No. I think that President Bush would have liked to push that a little farther into the arena of back where it was with Kennedy and with Eisenhower, where people in the Senate who got, first of all, you were not allowed to sit on one of these committees unless you knew how to keep your mouth shut.
Right.
And the problem is that's all gone now. They go on there, they leak like sieves, they give stuff away to the press. There used to be an honor amongst the politicians that national security was sacrosanct. This is not a political football. If you want to play that game, go over to the judiciary, go to, you know, the Armed Services Committee. Unfortunately, you know, could never be that because there's too much money at play. But intelligence, it was simply, you're going to come on this committee, you're going to keep your mouth shut, you're going to see things you can never talk about, and that was that. And they all said, you know what? We have to do this, because if we want to stay safe in this world, this is what we have to allow the CIA and these other agencies to do. That's all gone out the window now.
Yep.
And I'll be honest, mostly from the Democrats. And I'm with this pork in the various budgets. I'll spread the blame all over the place. But when it comes to this intelligence issue, the Democrats have been abominable in keeping their mouth shut.
So I guess you're pretty happy. You're pretty happy that Al Franken's most likely going to be your new senator.
It pains me because Senator Coleman, was the mayor of St. Paul, and he's a great guy, very effective, I was a big supporter of his. But you know,
hey, let's turn to the to some other stuff about the bad guys, because part of the wonder of this book is that you're trying to educate people about the bad guys. Now, I have always been a thriller fan. I read Len Dayton and Le Carre when I was growing up because I wanted to know what was going on, and I think you teach more about the Cold War in novels and what it was really like in Berlin and what it was really like to be at the tip of the spear. And now you're doing the same thing. Did you intend to start out that, or were you just telling stories and making money? And now have you adopted that mission of trying to get people to understand what it's like?
It's really interesting you ask that, because at the beginning, I think I was trying to tell a story, and I believe the marketplace it's a big place. Okay. So John Grisham, who I have a ton of respect for, David Baldacci, I have a ton of respect for. I think they're both really talented writers. In fact, I think Grisham never gets enough credit. They tell their stories from the liberal side of the perspective. Okay, oftentimes the FBI is a bunch of bumbling fools and what have you. I still respect those two as writers, and I've heard nothing but great things about them as individuals. I have a different opinion than they do, though. And so I got into it because I used to get a little bummed out when I'd read Grisham and every FBI agent was an idiot. I said, you know, I've met a lot of these guys, and I want to tell the story from how I feel it is, that these are a lot of, you know, good family men, and they're selfless, and they're not doing it to make a bunch of money or satisfy their egos. They really do believe in this country and what it stands for. And so then it grew over time. Over the last 15 years, what has happened to you is I have grown so frustrated by this blatant partisanship. And I'll tell you, on 9/11, I was sitting in my house, and I saw the hole in the first hour, and Brian Gumbel was still on the Today Show, and he said, "Oh, you know, it looks like a small commuter plane has hit the world." And I'm like, and I remember they tried to take it down the one time, and I'm going, no.
That's it. I was on the air that day. I'll talk about that. We come back, how it changes everything if you're paying attention. Vince Flynn is my guest. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. 21 minutes after the hour, America, it's Hugh Hewitt with best-selling novelist Vince Flynn in a special edition of the program. All of Vince's books are linked over at hughhewitt.com, but you don't have to go looking for them there. You can go to any bookstore in the world and find Vince Flynn novels, starting with the very first one through number 11. You'll love them all. Pick your order, although the most recent one, Extreme Measure, is very timely right now. Vince Flynn, before we went to break, we're talking about the fact we're both blessed because we get to combine, in what we do for a living, the passion of educating people about the war. I get to do it by talking to anyone who writes books about the war that makes sense, whether it's John Burns, whether it's Lawrence Wright. I'll bring them on. If they know or have something to talk about the war, I want them to be. But you have to limit how much you do that. Otherwise, people are overwhelmed.
Yep.
Your books have to include a lot of other stuff besides who the bad guys are, or you'll lose your. You have to tell a good tale. But I found, as I read from 1 through 10 of the rap books, I didn't read the very first book, but 1 through 10 of the rap books, that you were getting better and better at doing more and more teaching. And I mean, like Al Yamini, I think you read through Memorial Day, and you're going to understand what makes these people tick a lot better. Or you go through the Palestinian terrorist who blows up the bad guys, and he's very interesting.
Executive power.
Exactly. Very interesting character.
Yep.
Very sympathetic to the Palestinians, by the way.
Well, and you caught on to it. When I told that story, you have a really good instinct for this. That was one of the books where before I sat down to write it, I said, you know what I want to do? I want to tell a parable of the Palestinian people that in the end, they're always screwed.
Yep.
And they're all, and typically by their Arab neighbors.
Yep.
And that's, I don't want to give away the ending of the book, but,
no.
It's a bad deal.
But that's a teaching function. The most recent book, I got a paragraph I copied out, Extreme Measures. Zawahiri and bin Laden had not used a mobile phone in years, and the rest of al-Qaeda and Taliban leadership used them only sparingly. Dozens had been killed or captured after making calls. One minute they'd be standing there talking, and the next thing you knew, a missile would come streaking through the air and blow them to bits. Now, I love this because it is absolutely true about Zawahiri and bin Laden. I've been told that by the highest sources. They're very security conscious now. They do not get close to getting exposed. But when we drop predators on people, we know what we're doing, Vince Flynn. And you're teaching people through a novel what's going on there.
You mean the American people or the terrorists?
No, the American people. No, the terrorists, no. They see themselves getting blown up on the cell phone. But
yeah, I don't. And I really don't buy into the fact that, the bin Laden types read my novels. I mean, I suppose there's a possibility somewhere along although I've been told recently, this blows me away, that my books are very popular in Saudi Arabia. And I don't know what that means, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, we actually have a fifth column in Saudi Arabia that believes in our struggle. But I've grown, my passion has grown. Right before the break, I said on 9/11, I remember sitting there, and I think part of the deal with an author is you spend so much time alone, you're constantly looking into the future, trying to think of what's going to happen. And I had a real sinking feeling that morning, and it was simply this. Do we have the stomach to do this? Do we have the stomach to fight these guys? Because I knew right away, because I've been writing about it, it wasn't going to be a five-year war. It was going to be a generational war, if not multi-generational war. And they're a lot hungrier than we are. And my fear was almost immediately that we would start to see casualties. The media would act the exact way they acted. I knew it was not hard to predict. And then the liberal politicians in Washington would start screaming bloody murder and tear this country apart. And all of these individuals I just mentioned, and you've talked about this, if they had been around on D-Day, we would have put everybody back on the ships and gone back to America and built the walls, and that would have been that. We would have quit.
Do you think, this two-part question. First of all, do you think the United States will be hit in a significant way again in the relatively near future by terrorists?
Without giving away what happens in the next book, I think when I did my research for Memorial Day, showed me how difficult it is to get your hands on a nuke. And as crazy as Ahmadinejad is and some of these other folks, AQ Khan in Pakistan and what have you, they know that if they go and let that nuke out of the Pandora's box, there's a good chance they're going to get a nuke coming right back down their throat. Which, and by the way, you know, detente was a wonderful thing. And when that congressman, I can't remember where he was from, came out and said, you know, I think we should put them on notice that if they set off a nuke in on American soil, that we're going to nuke Mecca and Medina. And, you know, a lot of the people in this country started to freak out.
I didn't like that. I'm on the, that's Tom Tancredo, but we make part company on this. But go ahead.
But I found it at least an interesting idea. Maybe not get that specific, but say, we will respond.
Well, I don't mind saying Tehran will be a parking lot if the Hezbollah uses a nuke against us. That's that's for sure. But where were you going with the next book?
Well, with the next book is, I think they're headed towards a more of what you see over in Israel, which is that because it's so difficult to get your hands on nukes or chemical weapons, the dirty weapon is much easier and can cause a lot of problems. I think you're more likely, and I don't want to give the book, you know, what happened in Extreme Measures, but talked to quite a few people in Washington who, when they read that book, they said, holy crap, you know, this is what we fear most outside of a nuke. But we kind of say that's real hard to get your, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them. This is the most plausible attack.
Did you see Al-Qaeda kill themselves playing around with the bubonic plague in Algeria?
I did see that.
You know, that's the other thing, Vince.
Well, don't be so sure they killed themselves. I read that, and the first thing I thought was, what a beautiful way to kill, to take the enemy out.
How interesting.
If you were to be able to send something into the camp and let them get it and say, you know, bye-bye.
You have been thinking about this. How free and easy are the guys and the gals you talk with from within the agencies?
Once they get to quiet. Most of what happens is when they retire, I hear more things. The other thing that happens is I am good at filling in the blanks. And I think Tom Clancy was the same way. You know, when he went out and wrote The Hunt for Red October, they only took him so far, and then he had to sit down and figure the rest of it out. You know, I was writing about the secret prisons before, and, you know, now, and this does put me into a bit of a moral crisis from a patriotic standpoint. I was writing about it without really thinking that, you know, when this program gets blown, it's going to hurt us from a national security standpoint. But I was sitting down, I was hearing some rumors here and there, and I thought, well, you know, if I was a CIA, what would I do? I sure as heck wouldn't bring him back to America. And I wouldn't put him in Guantanamo because everybody knows about Guantanamo. So if it was a real high-value, you know, terrorist, I'd take him to Uzbekistan.
You know?
And put him in some cargo container that got up to 120 degrees every day at the end of the airstrip and, you know, sweated it out of him.
It's amazing the amount of research and detail you have here about. I just was reminded about Rashid. Is it Rashid Dotson, the guy from the Tajik in Afghanistan? That's,
yes.
What possessed you to have him have a walk-on role?
Well, because he's a real character in real life, and he's a barbarian.
Yep.
Who happens to be on our side. And you can just imagine the reaction of a Taliban member that was about to be handed over to this man. They would be just mortified. What I found so interesting about it is you can lay that whole scenario out. And this is what scares me about extreme measures. You would virtually be guaranteed that you would have politicians on the left and Department of Justice officials that would react the exact way the characters reacted in the book.
100% certainty. Vince Flynn is my guest. We still got a half hour. Don't go anywhere, America. 1-800-520-1234. Don't bother to use it. Just sit there and listen. 34 minutes after the hour, America. It's Hugh Hewitt with Vince Flynn, America's best-selling author. Vince, I'm running low on time with three segments, two of them pretty short. So I'm going to bounce around to the things I just absolutely have to ask you about.
Okay.
In Act of Treason, you've got a side... Cy Garrett is a character. I've been avoiding telling many plot details here because I hate to give away plots. People have to read it for them. But he's a political consultant. He's like Axelrod. He's like Rove.
Yep.
You loathe him. Everybody loathes him by the end of this book. What do you think of this professional class of media and electorate manipulators? And they're on both sides of the spectrum. All right. They're on the left and they're on the right. What do you think of them?
Well, where I have a problem, I had a Hollywood producer who read that book and called me up and said, and this shows you how people in Hollywood can be kind of miss the mark occasionally. He said to me, I love that book because something happens at the beginning of the next one. you know, I love that, that Garrett got what he deserved, and I just, I knew it was Karl Rove, wasn't it? I looked at the guy, and I'm like, no. I like Karl.
I know Karl.
I like him. I think Karl has been really unfairly
He's a very moral guy. Yep.
Yeah, and he, you know what? He's funny. Yep. Karl is a very jovial, funny man, and he's not the sinister person that people like to make him out to be. And by the way, I don't think Axelrod seems like a bad guy either.
I've got a fix for him yet. I'll take your word on that. I don't have a fix on him.
I haven't met him, but I kind of get the feeling that I just don't think he's a horrible guy. Where I took that Garrett character, and he appears in Term Limits, the first book, the one that Rap is not in, but where I took him was, these men that you meet on occasion, there's quite a few of them out in Hollywood, quite a few producers in Hollywood that operate this way, that were obviously never raised by parents who taught them how to respect other people, who think it is okay to throw a temper tantrum anytime they want to get whatever they want and be just an absolute, you know, the most vile person you can imagine to get what they want done. Now, we finally have a chief of staff in the White House who I respect only in the sense that he is a he's a strong opponent. Okay.
Yep.
But anybody who thinks that anybody who hated Karl Rove because they think that he was radical has no right to stand up and say that they think Rahm Emanuel is a great guy, because Rahm is probably one of the most divisive, tenacious men in Washington. Now, I respect him because he's tenacious and he fights what he believes in. But you know, the Blagojevich tapes, you know, that's Rahm. Rahm likes to swear every other word, and if anybody gets in his way, he threatens to do really nasty things to him. And that's more like the Stu Garrett character.
Yep. Matt, it's fascinating that you studied these people. Do you spend much time with that class of person as opposed to the operators and the agents and the Secret Service people?
Not as much, because I don't enjoy it as much.
Okay.
You know, the other thing is, I had somebody ask me once. They said, you know, how do you write these books and not live in Washington? And I said, well, the answer is simple. I said, if I lived in Washington, I'd be like all the other people who get sucked into it, and then I'd start pulling my punches. You know, the truth of it, I actually deleted a paragraph one time because I consider Senator Coleman a good friend, and I wrote it, and I'm like, he's going to read this and think it's about
that's him.
It's really bad, and I deleted it.
Yeah, that's a good caution. Now, what about the media? There's a key figure, again, I'm not giving it away, an ABC correspondent in this book who plays, she has a huge role in a few of the books.
Mm-hmm.
What's your assessment of the talking heads, generally?
My assessment of the talking heads is that while they carry the banner of honor and truth and the virtue of integrity, the little sneaky secret is that they are more competitive than the best pro athletes. They will do whatever it takes to get the story and make a name for themselves. And at the end of the day, it's about satisfying their ego, and oftentimes a little bit of an insecure ego. And people don't take that into context enough. That when David Gregory used to stand up and throw his little temper tantrums in the White House, you know, press room, it's because David spoiled rotten. And David wanted to get the story so he could get, you know, he could advance his career. And it, you know, the truth be damned, and national security be damned, and respect for the president, all that stuff. I've grown increasingly tired of those people, and I think that they are... Some of them are bordering on treasonous. I'll be perfectly honest. I think it's ridiculous the way some of them operate.
And we might be talking here about the New York Times and LA Times when they release classified stories on terrorist surveillance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's...
And by the way, you go back 30 years ago. You talk about people with radical ideas. 30 years ago, the type of thing they are doing would have landed them in jail.
I'll be right back. Vince Flynn is my guest. His new book is Extreme Measures. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. 44 minutes after the hour, America. The time is rushing by. Vince Flynn has been my guest the entire show. This is the penultimate segment. Talking with America's best-selling author, his new book, Extreme Measures. A couple of questions about this, Vince Flynn. Nash is new here. And I guess my guess is you're taking him in a different direction than Rap, and that he's going to be around for a while. But what I found fascinating is this book that has gotten only high stakes, terrorism, counterterrorism, a lot of political drama, a lot of commentary, a lot of sidebars. It's also got babies with poopy diapers. It's got It's got erectile dysfunction. It's got, you know, juggling family life around. And I thought, because again, I know some of these people and the lives that they have real lives. They have real families. Was that part of the deal here?
It was. You know what? I was in Washington about 2.5 years ago with a good friend, and who was, you know, very high up in the clandestine service. And I heard him talking about some of the sacrifices he's had to make, and it hit me that this is the untold story. Nobody in the media talks about this. We talk about the military leaving. We all get that they, you know, they leave their families and they go and they sacrifice. But what most people don't understand is there's an entire group of people at the CIA and other agencies in Washington who, after 9/11, dropped it all. And they went, and they were gone for months on end. They didn't get to see their kids grow up as much as they would have liked. Many of them got divorced. Dad wasn't around, so kids got into some trouble with, you know, drugs and this and that. And then what really hit me, and there's a scene in Memorial Day or Extreme Measures where I talk about this, is here's these guys, okay, who have given this great sacrifice to their country. They don't get paid a lot. And they literally, they're pushing 80, 90, 100 hours a week
right.
for 5, 6 years in a row. And they're not asking for anything back. And then you start to see what goes on when we destroyed the tapes of the waterboarding interrogations. And you see these people in Washington, the political opportunists, start to demand investigations. And I saw the sadness in this guy's eyes, that he literally is like, you know, one of my biggest fears is that I'm going to fly back to D.C. after, you know, getting shot at over in Afghanistan, and the Justice Department is going to be waiting for me, and they're going to arrest me, and they're going to throw me in jail. And that's the thanks that I'm going to get when this country rang the bell and said, hey, go do whatever it takes to make sure we don't get hit. And that's what they went and did. And you know what? Do you expect them to come back with lily white gloves? I don't.
No.
And I don't. I think most people don't. But yet, the political opportunists, they can't help themselves. And you must have seen the parable in this book, Hugh, where I talk about the scorpion and the frog.
Yep. Oh, yep.
It is who they are. The politicians, the media types who all they really want to do is advance their own career, they can't help themselves. It's who they are. They see the opportunity, they jump to it. You are going to have more fun in the next 4 years watching Joe Biden stick his foot in his mouth, because the man, that's who he is.
Yeah, he cannot not be slow Joe Biden. Let me ask you, Vince Flynn, about the parable in, it's not a parable, the storyline in Executive Power, about the State Department Assistant Secretary talks to the ambassador, talks to the wrong person in the Philippines, who talks to the Abu Sayyaf guerrillas through the corrupt general, and bad things happen to good people, really bad things happen. And I got the sense that you were trying to communicate that indeed loose lips do sink ships, you idiots,
for sure.
and that. But we have not had a single prosecution of a leaker or a single story told of how intelligence backdooring, reverse engineering intelligence leads to death in the field. Why not? Why hasn't the government?
It drives me insane. The Valerie Plame deal. Okay, I have no issue with Valerie Plame, but I had a high ranking person at Langley tell me that every year they refer, on average, about 200 cases to the Justice Department where they feel their operatives have been outed. And in the last 5 years, guess how many cases they've pursued?
Yep, none.
One. The Valerie
Plame. Valerie Plame.
And again, this goes back to our old, you know, our education, you know, with logic. Everybody forgets one thing here. Valerie Plame would have never been outed if her husband hadn't gone and shot his mouth off. He was the one that put her in the crosshairs of everything. He knew his wife was a clandestine operative who hadn't served overseas in 3 years, you know, no mind you. He went and wrote the op-ed piece all on his own. And for him to do that and think that people weren't going to go, hey, who is he married to? I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of the Iranian thing that we're closing, I want to get back to protect and defend. Do you believe that we've got the kind of assets to let us know what they're up to, because we have worn out our intelligence service? Do you think we've got people who are still up to the game on the front lines?
No, unfortunately. I think we have ran these people into the ground. I think that we still have a lot of talented people at Langley specifically, you know, where I talk to people. But the truth of the matter is, Hugh, a lot of them have left. They've simply said enough. They saw the way that a lot of these guys were treated in the last 3 years with the investigations on the waterboarding and the enhanced measures and all that stuff. And they said, why? Why would I continue to do this? You know, their wives are looking at them saying, are you nuts? Are you, you're making 60 grand a year. I see you, you know, once every 3 months, you're home for a couple of weeks and you go back over there. And for what? So you can keep looking over your shoulder that the FBI is going to arrest you someday? And so, no, we've lost a lot of really talented people. And the other thing is, it's causing these guys to flinch. They're in the field, and they're hesitating. Do you know how bad it's gotten you? They get a prisoner now. You're not going to believe this. They get a prisoner now, and they start to interrogate him. Let's say, in a fairly high-value target, and the person's not talking. They have to call back to Langley. They got to get the attorneys to fill out the right legal forms, and the DCI has to sign it that it's okay for them to slap the guy and fax it back over there.
Isn't that amazing? That comes through in extreme measures. But unless you actually have researched, there's a tendency for me not to believe it's that bad. So I'm glad you're telling me it is that bad.
It's bad. It's literally, it's become, and no offense, you know, I know you got your law degree from Michigan, but we have too many lawyers.
Of course. Oh, no. But no. Amen. Amen. And you know what? Guys, the good ones have fled the government because you cannot write an opinion on any that will not end up having you ruined in the public practice of law if you were in the Bush Justice Department. Last segment coming up with Vince Flynn, not ruined, but compromised, maybe set back in your career ambitions. I'll talk about it some other time. I want to close my interview down. We return after this. 55 minutes after the Hour, America, it's Hugh Hewitt with Vince Flynn. Vince, first of all, thanks for spending the entire program with me. What a hoot. And I know that people who love your books are going to enjoy this. I have one more question. I just want to make sure I give you a chance as well if I have missed anything. Generally speaking, are you a happy guy?
Oh, yeah. I don't spend a lot of time looking in the rearview mirror. I mean, my kids are happy. I've got, you know, an awesome wife. Yeah, I'm very happy.
Okay. And so, generally speaking, do you think what you're doing has a dimension beyond just entertainment, that it's important that you're on? I talked to Jay Matthews last week about his book about inner city education, et cetera, and he's on a mission to try and get people to pay attention to inner city education. Are you on a kind of a mission?
I am. I mean, I don't even know if I knew I was on the mission until recently. Where it hits home is I just got back in town last night and opened up a big stack of mail that the publisher had sent, and there were you know, a couple letters from high school kids thanking me that they've never read before, and now they've become voracious readers. But, you know, the one that really gets me is I'll get the letter from the retired spook or active duty, or I'll meet the special forces guys when I'm traveling around, and they'll say to me, hey, thanks for telling our side of the story, because not enough people are doing it. And I'm a big student of history, Hugh, and I'm always it borders on unnerving me to disgusting me that the lack of respect I see from certain quarters of this country for the sacrifice that these men and women in the military and the national security community make for us. It drives me insane.
Do you think that will change if and when, and it's really a when, another major terrorist attack happens?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. In fact, go back to the 1930s and look at history, and I've got this horrible feeling that we're starting to repeat ourselves. And what happens when you force people to deny certain natural, let's say, market forces, and you force them to deny the obvious through things like political correctness and diversity, you can only do that for so long, and then it eventually snaps back, and there's a horrible effect, a horrible reprisal. And my fear is we're one or two attacks away from the mob mentality taking place and people finally saying, you know, screw it. Enough is enough. I've only seen one group of people running around causing all these problems, and they are Islamic radical fundamentalists between the age of 16 and 32. And let's stop this nonsense. And I'm not.
And then the mob takes over. Yep.
And it makes me nervous.
It makes me very nervous as well. And I think it's a good warning to conclude on that we've got to be very careful not to go so far in one direction that the snapback will be equally far in the other direction. Hey, yeah. Vince Flynn, thanks again. What a great joy, and I appreciate it. Next time I'm in Minnesota, I'll buy you some French fries at the fair or something.
No. I will buy you a steak dinner at Manny's.
Now, that's a deal. I look forward to it. And say hello to your long-suffering wife for us as well, because she let you get away for a few hours with us today. I appreciate it very much, especially since you've been traveling. America, thanks. I'll be back. Thank you, Generalissimo. Thank you, Adam, for setting this up. Thank you, especially Minnesota, for producing Vince Flynn. We'll talk to you on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.